Here you're coming in really at a great point in the class because we are starting John 2 today. So it's going to be our focus, these 13 verses that we go through class today. So if you haven't done your lesson, open up to John chapter 2. Maybe even if you have done your lesson, open up to John chapter 2. Probably a good idea. I have lessons number 12 on the back table to my left over there, fresh off the copier for Wednesday night. We'll do John 3 on Wednesday. Again, for those that are visiting and those that are also listening on the web, we're really glad to have you here with us this morning as we continue in our study. And we're almost done with our study, which is kind of sad. Appreciate Philip filling in on Wednesday while I was out. I'm sure you had a great class. And with that in mind, I'm not going to review. We're going to jump right into today's material. But one of the things that I said, I guess I've said it several times as we've gone through these classes, is it is very important to understand the text, know the text, but it's also tremendously important for us to put personal application to these things that we're reading about and studying about, right? If we come back and we're just all scholars of John's three letters, that's good, but great would be to be able to put these things in practice in our own lives in a very practical way. So today's class is really structured and geared around this methodology of looking for application. And we're actually going to do a group exercise a little bit later in the class, individual exercise, break up in groups to that point. So when you think about applications, when you're studying something, there are really three different categories that I've come up with here. The first one is just like actions in my life. Right, so how is this going to affect the things that I say and do and who I am? We've got a methodology where I work here when we give performance reviews or feedback on someone. Someone comes and asks and says, how's this person doing in your department, in your group? This methodology of saying what they should stop doing, what they should start doing, what they continue doing, right? It's a pretty easy format. And then when the person that's getting the review hears that, it's pretty easy to understand the feedback here. You really think about John's writings here, not only in John 2, but also in John 1 and 3, this is kind of his approach, right? He's told these folks some things that they need to stop doing, some things that they need to start doing, and then he's commended them on some things that they need to continue on. So these are applicable for us, and we'll go down through them really quickly. Hopefully, we're getting these same pieces of feedback in our lives, and we're applying them and turning them into action. So if you had to say, John, so far, what are a couple things that he's saying? Stop. This is not right. What do you want them to stop doing? Easy answers are always first, so jump in. Someone's got it. Yeah, stop straying from the word, but stop sinning, right? They were sinning, right? I told you it was an easy answer. So stop sinning. What else is his other big concern here? We're going to really see it in today's lesson, but it was also a concern in 1 John. What had happened? Was everything just rosy and they were abiding in the truth that John had left with them in the gospel? Or had something changed that? They were false teachers. They were believing whatever people said. They weren't comparing it back to the original things that John had said. They were just listening, it seems like, almost anything. So you can see John putting up his hands. Stop! Stop doing this. Okay. There were a couple of start things as well. And I think all of these points you're going to see in today's lesson. But also, if you go back through 1 John, he repeats these over and over again. So what are they supposed to be starting to do? Walking in the truth, right? So that's good. That's kind of the opposite of sinning. And what is an integral part of walking in the truth? Loving one another. Very good. So I want you to start loving one another if you haven't already. What was the other thing, the other aspect of truth that they had once believed but had gotten away from? Obedience, yes. But they actually stopped believing that Jesus is God's son. You really need to start doing that. So you need to start being obedient, and then you guys got the loving one as well here. And then continue. I just put that they need to continue in the truth that they've heard, right? So John says this several times in John 1. He's going to say it again today in John 2. These are not new things. I'm writing to remind you of things and the commandments that you've heard before, right? So the continue part is, hey, you've already got the truth. Keep going and continue in these things. So this is a couple of the very simple action things. Does anyone have anything to add on this before we keep going? Lorraine? Absolutely. Absolutely. So, very good. So focus on spiritual things, focus on God instead of material things of the world. Yeah, there's a lot more that we could add to this, certainly. These are kind of the ones that I just came up with really quickly if you wanted to kind of summarize. So these things are obviously applicable for us, and hopefully we're getting these messages as well. So I've got two more areas of application, but before we do that, I've asked Steve to lead us in prayer. So beyond just simple actions, these might be a little bit easy. Maybe they're difficult. They were certainly difficult for the people that John was writing to. But beyond specific actions in our lives, I believe there's also a category here of viewpoints and beliefs. They're a little bit deeper, right? So John had already mentioned in 1 John that the false teachers had come in. Today in 2 John chapter 7, he says deceivers have come in. So deceivers and false teachers, to me, has an implication that maybe some of the things that they're saying sound good, but when you dig a little bit deeper, they're actually not good, and they're actually contrary to God's Word, contrary to the things that John has already told them about. So for us, to really get the most out of this class, we can go a little bit deeper into a pattern of belief and how we look at things based on how John wants us to look at things and how Christ looked at things, and also some interactions with others here. So I'm going to suggest to you that in these 13 verses, there is a tremendous amount of teaching. We have these things related to the action items, things that we should start doing, things we should stop doing, admonitions from John to continue. But we also have some really good examples and deep stories and meanings that will affect the way that we think about things and maybe some beliefs that we have. Maybe some beliefs that we've heard other people say, share with us, and we'll know how to answer that maybe in a little bit different way. So I'm going to start with the body of the exercise that we're going to do at the end of the class, just so you can be thinking about it now as we go through the text. What I want you to do as we go through the text is think about how might these verses, these 13 verses, apply to the statements that I'm going to put on the screen here. And then we're going to, after we go through the text, we're going to break up. I've got a little handout, and you're going to write down, is there a verse in 2 John that might be able to answer this question? Maybe it supports the statement. Maybe it takes away from the statement and shows that the statement is not true. And I've got five things. I actually had like 10 things, and I had to shorten them up because I know there's no way we can get through 10 things. I'm not sure we're going to get through five things. But like you, I hear a lot of things when I'm studying with people, when I'm reading things. So some of these quotes are things that I've gotten directly off of religious websites, things that I've heard, and I've had people sitting across the table from me in a study say to me, and some of them are paraphrases of all of that. So I'm going to show you these five things. We're going to kind of lock them in our brain, think about them a little bit, and as we go through the lesson, we're going to come back to it, and you guys are going to show me verses that either support or take these views apart. So the first statement, the best path to know God is diverse and inclusive of many viewpoints. Christianity is a religion that degrades women and minimizes their importance. Anyone that would withhold fellowship or hospitality for someone based on their religious teachings or views is not practicing the love of Christ. These people are practicing hate. Those truly saved by Christ should not be concerned about their future actions separating them from God. Those that do fall away were never really saved to begin with. We should never celebrate one's faith, but rather accept all men and rejoice with them wherever they are. All right, so I'm not going to let you look at that too long. I'm just going to let you have a flavor of that right now to kind of get you thinking. And we're going to come back to this at the end, and I'm going to ask you to use 2 John to answer some of these things. You can use other passages as well, but I think a lot of the answers are actually here in 2 John. So, we are going to read the first part of the text like we always do, and I've asked the other Steve to read. Great. So who's writing here, and how does he refer to himself? The elder, John. Yeah, we kind of covered why we believe it's John here. Who is he writing to, and what is his descriptor there in verse 2? Elect lady and her children. So I did some study on this, and I'm sure you guys have looked at this before as well. There are some people that believe that the elect lady is actually referring to the church. As I've gone through it, I don't really think that matches the text and how he's talking to this person. I do believe that it's an individual. But even if you get to the point where it's an individual, this language of the elect lady is kind of interesting. It's very interesting to me. So if we kind of break it down a little bit here, electa, which is basically elect, it could have been a name that had a specific meaning. So an example today, we often name children like Hope, or Here's Faith, or Here's Grace. And this term elect could have actually been her name. So to the lady elect, or the lady elect, it could have been specifically a name, and that would have been in keeping with the way they used names and the way they called people at that time, just like we use words that also have specific meaning for names. I think probably the other alternative here is this, the other part in the Greek here is kura, which is lady, to the lady elect, which basically is talking about a description of who she was, her character, attributes about her. Not 100% certain which way it goes. It certainly seems from the text that there were some things about her character and the things that she was doing that would qualify the word elect as being a descriptor of who she was and how she was involved in God's service. So, interesting. I believe it was written specifically to a woman. Her name was either elect, or elect was a descriptor of her based on her actions and activity and what she was doing in God's work. Anyone got smarter than me on this, want to provide something on this? No? Okay, good. So now we're going to go to the one question that we're going to cover from the lesson material. So hopefully you guys did your lesson here. Question number 3 asks you to organize verse 3 into 3 different things that John was wishing for her on. And the 2 aspects on which these things were contained within our relationship with Jesus and with God. So what are the 3 things that he's praying on behalf that she will have? Grace, mercy, and peace. I'm going to have to get someone in the back on the next one. So what is the thing that surrounds these 3 things? So we have grace, mercy, and peace, but what are these? Where do these things come from, and what are they contained within? Someone else. Yes, way back. Yes, you said love? God. Yes, they come from God. Good. What else does he add to that description? Come from God and Christ in truth and love. So I kind of put this diagram together here. It kind of helps me think about it. If we surround ourselves in the truth and the love of God and Christ, these are some of the blessings that come from having that relationship with God and Christ. In contrast to that, I thought about this a little bit here as well. You would never say to someone that they should have peace if they're existing outside of God's love and truth, right? That's, you shouldn't be peace at peace. You should be concerned about that, wanting to get back in God's love and truth. If you accepted a different truth than God's truth, you certainly wouldn't want to have peace in that as well. And we could go down through the other attributes as well. We know that we get mercy only from God through his Son, Jesus. And last but not least, we can't expect to have grace if we're not showing the correct kind of love that we should have in our heart towards God, but also towards our fellow man. So I think here in this one verse, he shows us the things that he's asking for her, but he's also pointing to where those things are contained. And yes, they come from God and Christ. And their foundation is truth and love. Anyone have anything else beyond this for question 3? All right. Verse 4-6. What's going on here? What is the problem? Really kind of divide this letter up into 2 parts. First part, second part. There's at least 2 major issues or narratives or themes that John's trying to address here. What is the imperative here? Why is he writing? Why is he pleading with her? Walk with Christ, and specifically in that walk with Christ, what's missing? Sorry, I didn't hear. Commandments? Absolutely. Missing love? Yes. We have yet again another love emergency here that John is calling out. It's striking to me. Think about 1 John, how many times he's talked about love already. We kind of called this out that it's almost repetitive, to the point that every single chapter, it's love over and over again. And now we have the second writing, and he starts off immediately here talking about he's pleading with her. He's pleading with her that we would come back to this commandment that we've heard from the beginning, which is to love. So this certainly must have been in the list of problems that these folks were having, list of problems that Christian was having. This is certainly a very prevalent problem based on the number of times that he's brought it up, and his sense of urgency here about pleading with her that they would follow this commandment specifically around love. So my application out of this for us as well, if it was that big of a problem for them, it certainly is something that we should be on a potential lookout for as a problem for us as well. So I kind of broke it down. You know, what is he pleading with them about? He's pleading with them that they love one another and that we would walk according to the commandments, but love being one of those commandments. And he's just underscoring again here, this is the commandment that you've heard from the beginning. Right? Again, so this is nothing new, but yet he's going here again and doubling down on the importance of love that they need to have. Yeah, Steve. I think so. I think that's a good point. So some would imply not all, or potentially maybe the some that the ones that John haven't had exposure to, we don't really know. So they may, that is another possibility. But I think that's certainly an issue. There are some that are not following love. I think that's a very good point. I think another reason why he's concerned about this or brings this up again is that I believe that some of the false teachers, if not all the false teachers, weren't demonstrating love. So by calling the importance of love out in this commandment, it also, you know, beyond just telling me what I need to do and change in my life, it shines a flashlight on people that would come in and teach you things. If they're not following this basic first commandment that we've got here, you should be on guard. You should be watchful here for anything that would come from them, because you would know that that is not coming from God if it's not rooted in love and the foundation is not in love. That's good. So that's kind of the two things. One, an admonition for correction and to fix the problem. Number two, a way to identify people that say they're from God but that aren't really teaching love and aren't demonstrating love. Remember, we in 1 John, we had this whole thing about, you know, hey, if you say you have a relationship with God and you're not loving your brother, you're lying. You're lying to yourself. You're lying to others. So I think this sense of urgency about love is, number one, people were struggling with it. Number two, some of the deceivers that were coming in certainly were not practicing love in the way they should. And John's using this as a way to identify who's really from God and who's not from God. Anyone else have anything to add on that and the reason why love is such an emergency here? And he's taking more verses to cover it. Okay? All right. We're doing great. And we're going to move on to the back half of the text so we can get to our exercise. So, Steve, if you would read again. Thank you.
An Antichrist. Look to yourselves that we do not lose those things we work for, but that we may receive a full reward. Whoever transgresses and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. He who abides in the doctrine of Christ has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this doctrine, do not receive him into your house, nor greet him, for he who greets him shares in his evil deeds. Having many things to write to you, I did not wish to do so with paper and ink, but I hope to come to you and speak face to face, that our joy may be full. The children of your elect sister greet you. Amen.
Very good. Thank you. So I want to just start here and highlight here again the problem. So the second major narrative of 2 John, first is call to love and keeping the commandments, and the second one is here, there are going to be people that come in and deceive, and there's false teachers, it says deceivers twice in verse 7, and try and tear down those things that we've worked for, this foundation of truth. So that is the problem he sets the stage for, but I want to jump down to verse 9 and kind of talk about what he's meaning here in verse 9. In verse 9 it says, whoever transgresses. So this is, verse 9 is kind of the, he said in verse 7 there's deceivers that are coming, they're going to say things that aren't accurate. Verse 9 is kind of a definition of what that inaccuracy is. Whoever transgresses and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. So what is this doctrine of Christ that he's referring to? What does that mean, or what are possible meanings, and what do we see from the text here? Philip, you got your hand up. I know you do. Okay. That's the big question. I had another hand in the back, and we'll build on Philip's answer. That's what, yeah, Philip got your answer. Okay. Others, brave souls here. I think, so if we kind of work backwards up through, so you might say, well, this is just the doctrine of Christ is only talking about those that confess Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh. I don't think that's the complete story, because if we go all the way back to verse 4, he talks about people walking in truth as we've received commandments, right? So all this is building towards John's trying to tell them these things that he's told them before. So the teaching about Christ, the teaching of Christ coming in love, and the things that Christ has taught, I think falls into and builds up to verse 9. He also says here in verse 5, he reminds them of this, it's not this new commandment, but it's an old commandment that we should love each other. And then in verse 8, he talks about losing things we've worked for. So I believe if you kind of go down through this verse in sequence here, the things that we've worked for is this walking in truth, keeping of the commandments, loving each other. It would be inclusive also, certainly, of belief that Jesus Christ is God's Son, but I don't think that's 100% that the doctrine of Christ is just the fact that Jesus Christ is God's Son. If we look at some different translations on this passage, this particular one that I've been using in this class is the New King James Version. In the New American Standard Version, verse 9 is translated as this: anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. The one who abides in the teaching, he has both the Father and the Son. So this goes too far kind of infers there's a little bit more here than just a simple belief, right? If I ask you, was Jesus Christ God's Son? That is a yes or no question. You can't really go too far in either one of those responses. Yeah, I really, really, really believe he was God's Son, or I really, really, really don't believe he's God's Son. Going too far would imply that there's more than one thing in consideration here, more than one question. And I believe that more than one question, more than one doctrine includes more things, the other things that he's talked about in 2 John, in addition to certainly this foundational belief that we believe that Jesus Christ is God's Son. Okay. Anyone else want to venture a guess? Comment? Okay. So my question for you now we're going to shift heavy into application. How do we, if we use the version here of going too far, anyone that goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ, what are some circumstances and examples where we often find ourselves going too far and not abiding in the teachings of Christ? I've got a whole bunch. I'll give you the first one to kind of prime the pump here. So if we start with God's will, there's at least three primary ways that we go beyond the teaching of Christ, and there's probably a lot more here. The first one is simply what might have happened to these Christians that John was writing to, right? We get this idea that over time, God's will somehow changes, and we need to adapt based on circumstances. In the Gnostics' case, they have this higher enlightenment, higher intellectual capacity than they did before. So they're getting smarter now, and they're getting smarter, and that helps them have a better relationship with God than these old teachings and commandments that they got from the apostles and from Christ, from these eyewitnesses. So we're going to kind of now morph the teaching about what God's will is and what his will is not now, and it changes over time. It's actually subjective, not objective. That's one way. I'll put my next one up as well, because I'm going to run out of time if I don't. I think the other one here is that we come to an understanding of God's will by consensus, right? So now we have the apostles' teachings, we have John's teaching, And now we have people coming together and saying, okay, well, what do you think? And it's kind of like, you know, this round robin of what do you think, what do I think? And that somehow out of our own thinking, and again, out of our own intellect or maybe our own experience, we actually maybe know better or different than what God has called us to say. I mean, you see this, John keeps referring them back to, hey, these are not new commandments here. Something has changed in their minds. Either they think things have changed over time, or they've worked these things out collectively now that they believe God's will is something different than what they started with. And the last one, I think, really fits with this idea of going beyond. I'll put the infamous book of silence here, right? So we don't have instruction about it, but I'm going to add this into the teaching. And you get this idea that some of these deceivers were certainly coming in and adding teachings, right? One of the teachings was that our flesh was inherently sinful, therefore it didn't really matter how I live my life and the actions that I did in this body, because my body is inherently sinful. That is not a teaching that they'd certainly heard from the apostles, but there's an idea of going beyond and adding something different here to God's Word. I mean, there's an infinite amount of possibilities here, but I believe that part of what John is warning about here in these deceiving teachers, they're going beyond the teachings of Christ, that people were adding things in, taking things out that they'd reached by consensus, or they believed that God's will somehow had changed over time. So if we kind of look at, you know, graphically all these three things together, it's kind of like modifications to the Bible, to God's Word, filtering out the parts that we don't like. They didn't like the fact that Christ was actually deity in the flesh. They couldn't wrap their mind around that, so they just discounted that and said that God's Son really wasn't here in a physical body. And then additions, which would be pretty much limitless here in the scope of what you might do going beyond the doctrine of Christ. Okay. Philip. Okay. Correct. Yes. No, you go ahead. Yes. Correct. Correct. Very good. Thank you. Better summary than I could have done. Good. Okay. We're going to move on. Says something here very interesting in verse 10, this admonishment not to bring this doctrine or receive these people in the house. So, first of all, why this warning to bring these people into the home, these false teachers, these deceivers, and to greet this teacher? I'll throw out the first one here. It's kind of interesting. I can't think of a good analogy here. You don't tell someone, so like if I said to Larry, hey Larry, you need to slow down the tempo of your songs, that instruction would make perfect sense because Larry leads singing like all the time, right? But if I said that instruction to like myself, it wouldn't really make much sense because I never lead singing. I'm not very good at it. So I get one of the implications here for me is this admonishment about hospitality and greeting is to her because she was actually doing a lot of this, which is a good thing, right? You would never tell someone to do something differently or how they should do it unless they were never involved with it. So it's maybe part of the reason why she's elect. This woman is in the business of greeting and showing hospitality to teachers. Good thing. Something that should be admired and put up. But here there's a warning about this, and what is the basis of the foundation of the warning? What is the concern? Go ahead. Okay. Very good. So she's got a pattern of supporting teachers, and now someone has seen that she's supporting someone that's a deceiver and actually saying things that are wrong. Was her hand over here on the left side? No. I think that's part of it as well. And I mean, ultimately here, he says that you'll be a partaker in these evil deeds. So how would she be partaking in the evil deeds? Eric. Yes.
And those people would kind of be like their base of operation. So the hospitality back then would have been something that supported this organization.
Very good. Very good. So these false teachers and the deceivers, they would really be relying on someone in this circumstance. It's not like they can run down the road to Holiday Inn Express and get a hotel room and have restaurants like we do around, right? So they needed someone to support them in a very real way in terms of food and lodging when they're in a new city. So by her facilitating their accommodations and feeding them, she's really kind of complicit in accomplishing the work that they're doing. And I think that's the problem. He doesn't want her to do that because they're doing destructive things, to Philip's point, rather than constructive things. So I think that's the gist of it. Now, I haven't left much time at all for the exercise, but we are going to get into it. And I'm going to ask Roy to help me pass some of these things out. And I will get Joel as well here. And you guys divide and conquer, pass these out rather quickly. And we're going to get... Stan, will you do it too? Thank you. I should have done this earlier. So these are our five statements from before beginning of class. And we're going to take about 5 minutes and go down through these. And we're going to use the text to answer questions and kind of talk about these things that I put up there. But before we do it, I want to get us set up for just a general idea about application, right? So we've just very rapidly went through 13 verses here in 2 John. I think there are a number of different ways that we can apply 2 John. Some of them good, some of them not so good, and some of them really, really poorly. So before we think about how we're going to use 2 John, I'm going to put up some ideas and ways that we could go about using the text to either refute or to support the statements that you're getting in your hand. We could say that 2 John is great. It is full of instructive examples that actually set the standard for how we should act in similar circumstances, right? So what's in 2 John is fair game, and beyond being fair game, it's actually really the standard I should be looking for when I'm thinking about applying similar circumstance. Letter B. Well, they're interesting stories, but they're potentially incomplete, and they need some enhancements, maybe some new ideas to determine the best course of action in our lives today, right? So, you know, I'm out. So share with a friend, and it will be on the screen. That's another way. C, these stories are written a really long time ago to a different group of people, might be somewhat helpful, but you know, our real actions today should be guided by what our heart tells us in love, right? So my course and my path is really guided primarily by my heart and what my heart tells me in love, regardless of what the story says. D, should be applied as an equal part of the Christian tradition developed since the time of Christ, right? So we had Christ's teaching, we had the apostles' teaching. You know, there's been a lot of books that have been written, a lot of great thought by religious people for the last 2,000 years. And all of that I'm going to use in combination to answer a question. Last but not least is E. If you just can't make up your mind, you're going to say all the above. It's circumstantial, right? Based on the circumstance, I may use any of these things to correctly answer a question as a Christian. Now, I haven't left much time for the exercise, so I'm going to go really quickly through the next slide. I would tell you that I believe the answer is exclusively A, and if you'd like to study that with me, we can. There are a number of verses in the New Testament that talk specifically about what the apostles are teaching and the seriousness by which they're teaching. They're referring to their teachings as commandments, things that should be followed. There's patterns for dealing with individuals that don't follow the patterns of teaching here, some instruction, some correction. But there's a ton of passages here that talk about the importance of using the stories that we actually use. And if you think about Jesus as well in his own life, whenever he had questions or an issue come up, where did he go? He went to the Scriptures. I think someone said that in a lesson here recently. So I believe the answer is A. If you want to talk about some of the others, we can talk about it. But here are our five statements. So we're going to go, and I really haven't left enough time, but we're going to go through this. So I want this side of the auditorium to start from the bottom and work up. And if you've already started, I'm sorry. This side's going to start from the top and work down. That way we can answer as many of these questions based on John 2. If you want to go to other scriptures to answer them, great. But let's think about John 2. And we're only going to go for like 2 minutes here because I want to hear what you have to say. I'm sorry, but like 30 seconds to wrap up. I know I didn't leave enough time for this. Okay, we're going to wrap it up. I'm sorry. We may actually do some of this on Wednesday, but I want to answer some of these right now because I know some of you probably won't be here on Wednesday or might not be here. So we can pick up where we left off on Wednesday. How about number two? This is an interesting one here. Christianity is a religion that degrades women and minimizes their importance. Validated, substantiated by John 2, refuted. What say you? Yeah. Kind of elevating her up, right? By calling her elect. Go ahead. Think about the canon of the Bible. Think about how many letters are written specifically to people. Take out like apostles and people like that. There's not a whole lot of them, right? And think about John's writings as well here. A gospel and then three letters, and here we have one specifically to a lady. That's pretty impressive. That's a pretty high percentage. It's certainly not something that is minimized, and her importance is really, really known here. What else do people have to build on that? Yes. Hundred percent. He's telling her that there are going to be these deceiving teachers come in, and in that statement, there's an implication here that she has the smarts intellectually and scripturally to be able to refute truth from error and make a determination. What else? Yes, ma'am. Yeah. So she's had an impact on people's lives, and beyond that, we kind of get the inference that she's already shown hospitality to other teachers, so she is part of the work of the church in a real meaningful way. Eric. Absolutely. So she is a fellow worker for the cause of Christ here, and he can't wait to connect with her face to face. I don't want to let this one go. Let's keep going. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Very good. So there's other people that know about this lady's works and what is she's doing in the service. Someone else over here. All right, we'll start one more, but we are going to pick this one up on Wednesday night. Those saved by Christ should not be concerned about their future actions separating them from God. If they do fall away, well, they were really never saved to begin with. What would you say about that? Verse 9. Well, we're going to have to look at verse 9 on Wednesday. Take this home with you, please. And we are going to start Wednesday night's class on this. And we're going to talk about it a little bit more. You can use anything in the Bible, but please use 2 John as part of your answer. Thank you. I didn't.